show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Great to have you along with us this afternoon on this sunny Southwest Florida day. I hope it's nice where you are, although it can't be any better than it is here. About 81 degrees today, sunny, a gorgeous day. And it is no wonder that everyone in the, you know, northern hemisphere is here today. Lots of traffic. People, it's that time of year when the folks we call snowbirds descend upon us here in Southwest Florida. And hopefully they brought lots of money this year, although signs are so far that they didn't. Lots of people coming on a shoestring this year. See, I do want to remind you before I get started today, something important coming up at 3:30 this afternoon, about 27 minutes from right now. We're going to have Ambassador Ed Peck going to be on with us today. The ambassador spent, he was ambassador in Iraq, and he spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and we've had Ed on the program before. What he doesn't know about the Middle East isn't worth knowing, I think. So we're going to look forward to having Ambassador Ed Peck with us this afternoon. Get everybody you know to tune in this afternoon. Oh, do you have that same feeling I do? You got your Christmas tree down. We celebrate the 12 days of Christmas at our home. And anyway, the tree's down as of yesterday. The holidays are over with for the year. The big holidays, you know, we got Valentine's Day coming up soon. But you know what I'm talking about, that period between Thanksgiving Day and New Year's Day when everyone kind of takes it easy and puts off any important things till after the holidays. You hear that over and over again. Well, we won't do anything about that until after the first of the year. Well, it's after the first of the year now. But, you know, shopping, partying, the college football games, all 34 of them this year. Oh, ho-hum. They weren't all ho-hum. My beloved Buckeyes last night got, I think it was, 16 seconds to go when Texas scored? What a shame. We lost that game just by an eyelash, but it was an evenly matched game. It was a great game between two great football teams, two great programs, and no shame in losing, although it would have been nice to win it. But college football season's all over with until tomorrow night. That'll be the national championship game, Oklahoma against the Gators. And I don't have really a favorite in that game, although I think the Gators will probably win. Enough about football, I guess. But it's time to get back to work. Time to put your nose back to the old grindstone. That is, if you still have a job. How was your Christmas bonus this year? Did you spend a ton of money on Christmas, or did you put the plastic away and remain sensible like a lot of people I know this year? A lot of people I know took it very easy on Christmas and had a rather austere Christmas season. And no harm in that either. And I should ask the question, do you even have any credit left on your plastic? How many of you received letters from credit card companies informing you of a decreased credit limit? Oh, yeah, that's happening with regularity right now. I know somebody that had a home equity line of credit and went to use it and was declined in a somewhat embarrassing situation, and found out that a couple of days later they got a letter in the mail claiming saying that their line of credit had been canceled. Not because anything they'd done, just that the bank was tightening up on that sort of thing. So banks, as I've always said, there's two groups of people you never, never, never have any compassion for or any bad, sad feelings for, is banks and insurance companies. They'll screw you. Every chance they get, they don't give a damn what you think, and that's the way it is. So, anyway. But anyway, vacation's over right now, and the grind is going to start up again, and foreclosures they stop some of the foreclosures during the holiday season to not be such Christmas Scrooges, but they're going to start them up again now in January. And, of course, there's more layoffs coming, bound to occur. And it's going to be another tough year. I'd like to have a lot of optimism about this year, but I don't. Normally this time of year, you're making New Year's resolutions or planning all the things you want to do for the year. And this year, I remain a little bit unsettled. I should say a bit more than unsettled. I am very apprehensive about this coming year, very much so, more than I've ever been in my life, certainly. And I do think it's going to be a tough year, probably a whole lot tougher than last year. And that old saying, the chickens are coming home to roost, maybe I believe they really are. And I've been looking to find a place where I can buy those good old navy beans in a 50 or 100 pound bag, if you know what I mean. And it's a good thing I like bean soup and cornbread, because I got a feeling I'm going to be having quite a lot of it this year. I don't need any more clothing, so I don't have to worry about that. And I hope my car will last for a while. And health insurance, well, got to stay well. That's the thing. And the mortgage is up to date, so even if you default now, you have a roof over your head for several months. So the basics, at my home anyway, food, clothing, and shelter are okay for now. Well, except for those pesky utility bills and taxes and gasoline and a whole lot of miscellaneous things we never seem to think of. I already cut out the caffeine-free Coke as my daily treat every day. Cut that out. Canceled the newspaper subscription. Of course, eating out is out of the question. Movies? Haven't been to one here for a very, very long time. And, of course, like everyone else, got to think of other ways to trim the old budget. But I am running out of ideas, and I wonder, do you have any innovative ideas on how to trim your budget and get through tough times? And if you do, hopefully you'll call and share those ideas with us today. Love to hear some of your frugal practices and how you plan on getting through these very tough times. Love to hear from you, and so would our audience at 866-546-5254. Yeah, getting ready to batten down the hatches. Perhaps I shouldn't feel that way. Perhaps I should be one of these people that just, hey, you know, why the long face? One of my favorite jokes. I won't go into it, but one of the mule walks into a bar and the bartender says, why the long face? All right. I thought it was funny. I always think it's funny. One of the world's shortest jokes. It's funny. Congratulations to Al Franken. Who would have guessed a couple of years ago when he was floundering around on Air America that Al Franken would end up being a United States Senator? I do admit that I found myself, found it difficult for me to have a lot of passion about that race, other than the fact that I can't stand Norm Coleman and there's a chance to get another Republican out of the seat, but I was never hot to trot about Al Franken becoming a United States Senator. I thought, hell, if Al can become a senator, anyone can become a senator. But congratulations to Al. I think for all the votes that were involved in that, that's probably the closest election I know of, I think, in my lifetime. It was even closer percentage-wise, I believe, than the one here in Florida a few years ago involving Oh, God, I don't want to bring it up. Al Gore. Speaking of foreclosures a couple of minutes ago, they announced here locally, and of course, as you know, some folks in our area here in Southwest Florida, we were number one in the monthly contest of foreclosures several times this past year. And for the year, get this, for the year, and this isn't all that big of an urban area, believe me, 27,000 foreclosures in Lee County, Florida. 27,000. That just boggles my mind. It just really blows me away. I was watching, we have a real estate channel here where they advertise real estate homes for sale. And, of course, the prices have been going down, 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 down. And that's bad news for all the property owners here. But I actually saw, and maybe this doesn't mean a lot to some of you in other areas, but we probably had our bubble blown up a little bigger than a lot of people did around the country. It was going nuts here a couple of years ago, two and a half years ago. And actually, I saw homes advertised last night on this TV program that were built in 2006, so we're not talking about old shacks here. 1,800 square foot brand new homes on a lot, a couple of years old. $55,000, $59,000. You'd have to live here to know what an eye opener that is. I mean, it's just incredible. These homes sold for $150,000 two and a half years ago, and I'm not kidding. People standing in line to buy them. That's how bad it was. And there are, I don't think we're near the bottom yet. I mean, I hope we're near it at least. But we are not at the bottom yet, and some people think we're not even close. God, I hope they're wrong. I really hope they're wrong. But I see that various companies are doing what they can to try and stimulate business, and I have to give them credit for doing so. We're in such a downtime. I admire the folks, the efforts they're putting out. The Hyundai car company, they come up with what I think is kind of a novel and a bit of an innovative program. I never heard anything like this before. They want to reassure car buyers who are worried about losing their jobs. Hey, honey, maybe we better not buy a new car. What if we lose our job? What if we get laid off? What if this? What if that? So Hyundai has decided to do something about it and kind of allay your fears about your job security and all. If you buy a new Hyundai and lose your job within a year, you can give it back. And there's no recriminations. Where I had a quote here someplace from Hyundai. It said, in this uncertain economy, we're looking for ways to reassure shoppers that Hyundai still represents the best value in the auto industry, said John Krafka, president and chief executive of Hyundai Motor America. He said, if you find that you cannot make your payment because of a covered life-changing event, we'll allow you to return your vehicle and walk away from your loan obligation, and in most cases, we will cover most, if not all, of the difference. They left a little wiggle room in there, didn't they? In most cases, read most, and we will cover, again, that word, most, if not all the difference. The car maker's website says that, and with no extra charge to the sticker price, you don't have to pay for this. The program pays the difference between the car's trade-in value at the time the owner files a claim and any remaining balance on the loan up to a maximum of $7,500. And one of the deals is you have to have made a couple of payments on that car before you are eligible for that. So that's a good idea. I realize that most of the automakers cannot do that. Aren't in that position, but the Hyundai's had it not all that bad. They've been growing and growing and growing from Korea, of course. So who knows how that's gonna shake out? And I do know that locally, the Hyundai dealer, I believe, said they sold 126 new cars in the past, 12, 18 days. Now that's a big dealership, and they're probably. I should qualify it when I say I believe they're the biggest Hyundai dealer in Florida. I could be wrong about that. And I see, who is it, Toyota? Hey, let's not blame the whole damn thing on the American automakers. Let's not just be chastising them and tell them, they're responsible for the ills of the world, because they are not. I think it's Toyota is shutting down all their plants. Maybe it's Nissan, one of the Japanese automakers, shutting down all their plants in Japan for 11 days. And that's not for vacation, folks. That's because they need to sell off some inventory. They've got the same problem that the American companies have, only not quite as bad yet. So it's not a problem that, you know, like all these senators and congressmen with laying it on the automakers. And that's not to say whether the automakers are not without blame, because they are. They have some blame. But they're not alone. Other automakers are having problems as well. And when you see a company like Toyota or Nissan or one of those shutting some of their plants down, you know that this is not just a local issue. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. One of my favorite people, we've got a variety of things to talk about today. Again, I do want to remind you that Ambassador Ed Peck will be with us at the bottom of the hour. One of my favorite people was pronounced banned for life from appearing on NBC. And the man Coulter, according to Drudge. Now, Drudge, of course, Drudge, the right-wing god guru of the media, that everybody says, oh, you got to trust Drudge, you know. Drudge is the man. Well, he pronounced that Coulter was banned from NBC for life. It isn't true. Her appearance on the Today Show was canceled, but NBC came out and said, we've had Ann Coulter on the Today Show many, many times, but because of the news in Washington and the Middle East, we decided to cancel her appearance tomorrow. That was actually for today. And understanding the media as well as she does, we're sure she knows this happens from time to time. So, and the man Coulter goes on the Sean Hannity Show and said, spoke about the Today Show, jerking me along and then canceling me at the last minute. She's going to be on Fox's Hannity and Combs and the CBS Early Show. I don't know. I wish they would ban her for life. Why is it that this horrible human being, Ann Coulter, and I realize it's a shtick. I think everybody knows it's got to be a shtick, and it's a good one. Because she is the bitch everybody loves to hate from the right. I mean, let's face it. You don't look at Ann Coulter and say, gee, I don't know whether I like her or not. Nobody looks at Ann Coulter and says, I don't know, I can take her or leave her. Nobody does that. You either love her, which a lot of people on the right do. God, I'll let you in on a little secret. I've talked to men on the right that think she's a sex symbol, and I just have to look at them and say, buddy, you're sick. You are really sick. If Ann Coulter is a sex symbol to you, you are one sick puppy. You really are. Ann Coulter. But she's good at her shtick. I must say she is. She sells a lot of books. She's become ultra rich. And, I can't stand her all the more because she is a graduate of the University of Michigan as well, you know. And that's not a good way to curry favor with me, at least. No. Hey, we're going to pause for a break at the top of the hour. And speaking of Ann, let's have a little song in tribute to our beloved Ann Coulter.
You make my little soldier stand attention when I see your equine features on my bedroom TV. Hey, Ann Coulter, they say that you're a poulter, geist or a banshee or a witch. I think you're just the perfect creature to help this cracker scratch his itch. While you're flogging the liberals and calling them faggots, I'm flogging the dummy. I really smack it for you. Hey, and I know you want it too. And while I'm flogging, there's a movie in my noggin starring me and you and some other dame. In combinations for which not even Hindus have a name. Hey, Ann Coulter, if I could be less older, richer, more handsome, with more class, bet I could get you to my mansion. Bet I could, well, you know, but don't even tell me you ain't into that. Oh, Ann, I love you, and I defend you all the time. When people say you're mean, I say that's just showmanship. The way a dominatrix uses a whip. Oh, and I think you're beautiful, you willowy thoroughbred uber goddess. When they say you look horsey, it gives me conniptions. I say cultish is a better description. Shoulders, your sunken cheeks and dishwater mane. I say it makes you look exotic. They say it makes you look insane. But they're just jealous, cause lots and lots of fellas have fallen happy victims to your charms. Those radio callings who wear swastikas on their arms. Oh, I'd be ecstatic, my beautiful Annie, if you'd meet me in the paddock. Give me puddin' and me tonight. I'd ride you till the morning light. I can't believe anyone could be so silly to suggest that you're a fella, not really a filly. I'm sure that's not true. At least 65% sure.
If you're thinking of shopping at Walmart this holiday season, there's a 70% chance the gifts you buy come from communist China. America's largest corporation stocks its shelves with products made in Chinese factories, while more and more American factories are forced to shut down. Behind those prices Walmart likes to brag about, countless American jobs lost overseas. In this race to the bottom, Walmart gets ahead and the middle class gets left behind. America can't afford it any longer.
Hey, thanks for joining us here this afternoon on the Guy James Show. Coming up very shortly, got Hillary Jones in the background there. Who says women can't play drums? Let me tell you, nobody better than Hillary. Hillary Jones. Ambassador Ed Peck coming up in just a couple of minutes, and we'll be talking about the situation in Gaza. Tough situation going on there right now. Very tough. Hard for me to watch, hard for a lot of you to watch. Passions running high on both sides, both Israelis and Palestinians. This is a subject that'll get you into a fight in no time in public circles. Believe me, I know. I'm not talking about a physical fight, but I've... Just a day or so ago, was involved in quite a discussion about this, and I didn't get heated about it. But let me tell you, the two people I was talking to got just plain red hot irate, and I didn't mean for it to be that way. They asked my opinion of it. I told them my opinion of it, and they weren't happy with what I had to say. So if you're not going to be happy with what I have to say, if you're going to react in that manner, then if you know me, don't ask me what I have to say, because I will tell you. I will not candy coat it for you. I feel that if you ask me something, that you deserve the truth. Don't you think? Anybody listening, if you ask a question of someone, you want an honest answer, don't you? I would feel insulted if I knew somebody was patronizing me or candy-coating something or dancing around the edges. It's the same way with me. When I ask somebody a question, I want the plain old unvarnished truth. Don't dance around it. And the couple of people I was involved in this discussion with know me well enough that they were going to get the honest answer, what I thought about it. I think it's a horrible situation in Gaza right now. I think it need not have happened. I think the response by the Israelis is outrageous. Completely outrageous. I think the world community agrees with me. Much of the world community, except, of course, the government of the United States of America. And if Israel wants to get involved in a genocidal action against anybody in the Middle East, Uncle Sam will back them no matter what. That is the history of the situation, and it will remain the history of the situation ad infinitum. We will never, that I can see, at least in my lifetime, ever go against one thing that Israel ever does. And please spare me the anti-Semitic crap. Doesn't have anything to do with religion. It has everything to do with humanity. Yeah, I look at somebody, I don't look at their religion, I don't look at their color, I just see that they're another fellow human being on this planet. Somebody I'm sharing the space and the air with. That's what I see. I see some people more fortunate than I am, less fortunate than I am, smarter, maybe less smart, better looking, not as good looking. That's what I see. I don't see people's religion. I don't see people's color. Hell, that doesn't matter about anything. So spare me that stuff. I can't stand it when I start in on a discussion. And especially knowing a good deal about the history of the Middle East. I am a student of the Middle East. I know usually what I'm talking about. I don't want to debate anybody that's a lifelong scholar about the situation, but I know enough about it that I'm not going to talk off the top of my hat. Where'd that come from, off the top of my hat? Why do people say that? I don't know. But it just really gets me immediately when people the other day asked me about this and I told them how I felt about it. I said, well, you're anti-Semitic. It didn't occur to me. Didn't occur to me that these were Jews and Muslims fighting each other. Didn't occur to me. Oh, yes, I mean, intellectually I thought about it. But as far as being biased one way or another, I don't care. Buddhists, Confucius, Taoists, Hindus, Christians, I don't care. Got nothing to do with it as to how I feel about it. Nothing. Oh, I don't know. It's a crazy situation. Hey, we're going to pause for another break right now while we get a hold of our guest. And we shall be back in just a couple of minutes with Ambassador Ed Peck. Don't go away. All right, back with you here on the Guy James Show, coming to you live from Southwest Florida today. I was just talking to our friend, Ambassador Ed Peck, who is in Washington. Ambassador, welcome to the program.
I'm honored to be here, sir.
You were mentioning that it's wet, cold, and rainy where you're at today.
Yeah, it's kind of typical, atypical for Florida, but not typical for us up here in the frozen north, as it were.
I'm almost ashamed to tell everybody that it's 81 and sunny here today, but so I won't mention it again.
Thank you, sir.
Although I'll be heading your way, in 12 days for the inauguration. So,
well, you're coming up here to do that, are you?
Yes, coming up, and we're going to do that and going to meet with the Democratic Senatorial Caucus the day afterwards. So that's going to be... Looking forward to it anyway, so I can get in some of that cold and rain as well.
I'll try to arrange it.
Ambassador, the reason we had you on, of course, today is one of the questions that's, well, that's something we've talked about at length on the program as of late is the situation in Gaza between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I know there's nobody more able and more qualified to talk about it than are you. Having spent much time in that area and talked to those folks, how do you see this situation going on right now? What precipitated it? And, of course, we could have a day-long discussion about that. But where do you think we are in this whole business right now? It looks rather bleak.
Bleak is the word that I would use. I think you know that I spent the month of November out in that part of the world. Our little group went from Lebanon to Syria to Jordan to West Bank to Israel, talking to military, political, religious, and opposition leaders, plus people in the street and so on, trying to get a handle on what it was they expected, Guy, from the new president-elect of the United States. Not surprisingly, the people in the street, the ordinary folks who didn't know much about politics, expected him to conquer every problem in the world, with the possible exception of male pattern baldness, in the first 10 days in office. The people who were in governments were a little more realistic, recognizing the way this nation works, or doesn't, depending on how you look at it. I'm a realist. Nobody is going to really benefit much from what's going out there now. It is the sort of thing which everybody blames on everyone else. That's perfectly normal. Neither side is doing anything bad. They're all doing things that are justified and reasonable. And the reason it should be of great and growing interest to us as Americans is the fact that we are looked upon as being in part responsible for making it all possible. And this is the downside. And why I feel personally that it's unfortunate that the Americans are neither well-informed nor really interested. And I think that one of the reasons they're not very interested is that they aren't very well-informed.
Indeed. Indeed. Aren't we partly responsible for this?
Well, yes. I guess the example that's current right now, depending on how you look at it, is the United Nations Security Council has been told that we, the United States, will veto any resolution from the Security Council pushing for a ceasefire. But what's wrong with having a ceasefire? Or, to put it another way, what's wrong with having the resolution? The United Nations has no possible means for enforcing it. It's merely the reflection of how the world, or the most part of it, feels about what's going on over there. So when we do that, people say, well, you are colluding with the Israelis. Whether that's what we're doing or not is beside the point. The key thing, really, in all of this kind of business is that perception is what rules it. And you come to your conclusions as to what's really happening based upon your own perceptions of reality.
Well, can the Israelis win this whole business with an argument and a PR campaign? We are hearing a big PR campaign coming from them, but this isn't, to me, I don't see this as a conflict, but all along I've seen it as an occupation.
Well, you've actually put the right words on it. People always talk about, you know, ending the conflict, but there's not a conflict there. in the sense of two nations with borders and armies fighting over, because the Palestinians have neither a border nor an army and have been in that situation for a long time. So when we read in the paper about Israel's understandable frustration and anger and other things because of the rockets, the homemade rockets that are being fired over there, it's useful to remember that for 41 years, that area has been either occupied or under a total embargo. And if you think back to 1967, when the nation of Egypt closed off the Gulf of Aqaba and would not permit any ships that were going into the Israeli port of Eilat to enter, the Israelis declared that that was an act of war, which is precisely what precipitated the 1967 war.
Yes.
Well, but Israel still had its ports on the Mediterranean coast that they could use. And, of course, Gaza doesn't have any ports anywhere that it can use.
So the same thing that they accused the Egyptians of in 67 that was so heinous in their opinion and started the 1967 war, they're doing the same thing now, but this is a good thing.
Well, people always look at it that way. You know, let's bring up a very thorny issue that touches on this. Who's a terrorist? The terrorists are the guys on that side. Our guys are freedom fighters.
Right.
Isn't that the way everyone's looked at it?
It sure does. It is.
And, you know, you get into this, forgive me, this is related, but peripheral in the sense that people ask me sometimes when I'm out on the hustings, these folks that are going into Iraq to fight the American forces, they are terrorists. And I have developed a response that I use saying, you know, I think of that every single time I cross Pennsylvania Avenue here in Washington and walk through Lafayette Square. That terrorist who came over here to fight the British.
Yeah.
He was a terrorist, wasn't he?
We've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a terrorist in the eyes of the British, I suppose.
Oh, he sure was.
To us, he was a hero because he came to help us fight that war. Gosh. So it's difficult to look at that, but we have had... The world has had some very impressive individuals, such as George Washington, Menachem Begin, Jomo Kenyatta, and Nelson Mandela, who fought for the freedom of their people. In the eyes of the people for whom they are fighting, they are heroes. And everybody else sees them as terrorists.
They didn't
painful though it may be.
Well, they didn't see the bombing of the King David Hotel as a terrorist act, but... we know that's what it was, but no. Let me ask.
I mean, when you remember, you get some of the folks who involved in hanging British soldiers from the trees in mandated Palestine,
yes,
and who were involved in blowing up the King David Hotel and starting the Exodus by killing the men and boys in Deir Yassin. You know, they later said, and I heard one of them say it, that our cause was just. Well, of course it was. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been doing it. But the people you were killing may not have seen it in exactly that light.
No, they didn't. Right now, in Gaza, the situation there, the pretense is that we've got to go in there and stop these rocket attacks that the Hamas is throwing. That's not the reason for this, is it?
Well, yes, it is, because understand now, this is a nation where the people are clamoring to the leadership to do something. In our country, we invade Iraq or Afghanistan because the leaders have to show that they're out there to protect the people. But the difficulty, as I see it, is that the folks who read about that in what passes for the American media tend to forget that for the last 2.5 years, Gaza, I'll take it back, for the last 41 years, Gaza has been sealed off from the rest of the world. So things are tough there. Things are miserable there. Things are savage and nasty and dirty there. But all you're thinking about is the rockets, because that's essentially what the press in this country talks about.
Yes. But that's not the... I mean, is that the... Is that the long-term goal of the Israelis in there now? Isn't it to depose the government and impose their control on Gaza?
Well, I'm not sure that they know what they're going to do. It reminds me a little bit, painfully, of the American involvement in Iraq. We're going to go in there and, hey, come on, guys. Have you figured out exactly what it is you're going to do? Well, not exactly. Not exactly. What we want to do is to stop what's going on. Now, this may not be the way that you do that. Therein lies the problem. You may be creating bigger difficulties for yourself than the ones you were facing before.
Aren't they?
The Israelis don't talk to me to explain what it is they're doing. I don't blame them for that. My own government doesn't tell me. But they're frustrated. They got a terrible problem. They are so proud of the fact that they, quote, withdrew from Gaza. If that's a withdrawal, I wonder what happens if you really go away and leave people alone. There was an article in the Washington Post today which said if the people of Gaza would just concentrate on, get this now, on developing tourism and industry, they wouldn't have these difficulties.
Tourism?
Yeah, tourism. I mean, you want to, forgive me, I'm being a little facetious here, but if you want to get on the ground floor on real estate investments or even a couple levels down, the place to do it, of course, is in Gaza.
Well, the really ugly part of all this is that, in terms of international terrorism, it does mean activities that involve, and I'm actually reading from the code, violent acts or acts dangerous to human life that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state, and that appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have many scenes coming out of there now that the civilian population is terrified. They're getting killed by the dozens. It's something that, as far as a PR situation, I don't know that the Israelis can overcome that.
Well, and I'm not sure that they have to. By the way, you left out one of the other important parts of that particular legislation in which they refer to assassination as being terrorism as well.
Yes.
And I can think of a couple of countries that are engaged in that kind of activity. They don't need to worry much about public relations in the sense that you and I understand the word, because as the most powerful military force in the region, they can pretty much do what they wish. What they have to be prepared for, of course, is the reaction from people who don't like what they're doing. And therein lies the problem, because you can easily, beat up on, certainly on the Palestinians who are prostrate and helpless, but there may be a price that you pay down the road. Another op-ed piece in today's Post talked about how Israel merely wants to live in peace and security amongst her neighbors. Well, to the extent that that's true, I'm not sure they're going at it the right way.
No.
In fact, I'm awfully sure that they're not, because, that is not going to bring you peace and security, much as you and I would like to see it for Israel. This is not how you get there.
Is there any solution to this between those parties? Can a solution be had by those two parties without an outside influence coming in and saying, look?
Yeah, I think so. It's happened in so many other parts of the world where people, can take a deep breath, and suck it up, I guess is the expression that one uses, suck it up and come to a peaceful resolution of long-standing issues. I offer you Europe as an example. It took them a long time to get there, but essentially they have. And no outside force can do it. People say the Americans have to go in and tell them how to run it. Nonsense. What are we going to do, threaten Israel with war if they don't do what we tell them? Israel, like every country in the world, Guy, has the right, however mistaken they may be, to do whatever they believe is in their best interests. But then you got to hope that you're correct in your assumptions.
But in order to get two parties to sit down and negotiate in good faith and come to a resolution of this problem, they have to be suffering equally, don't they? This is one-sided.
Okay, if suffering may not be the word, but I've always said, and you may quote me, that you cannot really talk about Israeli-Palestinian negotiations because the armed guards do not negotiate with the prostrate prisoners. That is not a negotiation. In the same sense that you cannot speak of an Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because a conflict is between two, you know, sovereign states with armies and borders to defend them, and the Palestinians don't have any of that. It's an occupation, pure and simple. The solution, of course, long sought by many people, I mean, except maybe in Israel, I can understand, is the occupation. That's what it's all about. You have occupied my land, and I don't like it, and therefore, and it's legal, it's recognized by the Geneva Convention, I'm going to try to defend it.
All right, we put you, Ambassador Ed Peck, in as the governor, if you will, of the entire region over there. What do you do to solve this?
Wait, the governor of the entire region?
Yes.
You mean with what kind of authority?
Ultimate authority. You can decide how to force this to an end. What do you do?
I get the Israelis to consider that the goal of living in peace and security among her neighbors, which I believe is Israel's goal, can only be attained if you stop doing what you're doing and withdraw back to those 67 borders. The Arab states have said since 2002, you know, if you do that, hey, we'll have normal, regular relations with you, because you cannot impose peace and security. Golda Meir said it best. You remember who she was?
Of course.
She said, it's important to keep your friends close and your enemies closer, because you don't have to make peace with your friends. And in the Middle East there, where Israel has been so powerfully powerful for so long, they seem to have forgotten that that is the key. Thank you very much. That is the key to a peaceful, secure coexistence with your neighbors.
So the heads of state in the region, mostly friendly to America, is one thing. The peoples of those countries are another. They don't accept the Jewish state in the middle of where they are. Do you think they ultimately would?
Oh, yeah. They've made it clear that they would. And even Hamas, the group that I was traveling with, has met with Hamas leaders. They have to do what every nation's leadership does. They have to put out a strong policy so the people will support them. You know, we're going to whip this inflation. We're going to fix this. We're going to take care of that. And this is what you have to do in politics. And I don't use that to be a pejorative expression. So they have said that they would accept what turns out to be, 22% of the original Palestine, although the United Nations gave them 45% 61 years ago. So they could, yes, and it's worked, you know, in other parts of the world. Look at France and Germany. I don't think anybody anywhere would expect France and Germany ever to go to war again. Will they always agree? Hell no. But armies marching across the border? No, they've been there. They've done that, and they've been at it for a long time. By contrast, in the Middle East, the struggle between Arabs and Jews, or Muslims and Jews, is relatively recent, because ever since Spain expelled the Jews in 1492, Jews lived in peace and security amongst the Arab world, where, as you are probably aware, the Quran gives the Jews and the Christians mention as the people of the book, and they have always practiced free religion. That doesn't mean that that guy there doesn't discriminate against that guy there one way or the other. But as far as the nations were concerned and their governments, hey, leave them alone. They're the people of the book.
Well, I hope this suffering can all end soon. We're seeing many horrifying images. We're seeing now the use of phosphorus shells, children, women, horrifying images to the world. And it's... It is heart-wrenching indeed, and I don't think that you're going to see a significant difference when the Obama administration takes over as far as the Americans' view of it. Do you?
No, I don't. I'm a little disappointed about that. one had the impression that a little more balance would come into our relationship with that part of the world, but my dreams of that taking place have largely dissipated. And like many others, I am really, really surprised by the silent position that he's taken on this issue, hiding behind, I don't use that to be negative, but hiding behind the idea, well, there's only one president. Well, yeah, but Mr. Obama, you've talked about Iran, you've talked about Mumbai, you've talked about Afghanistan and Iraq, you've talked about all the economic, why all of a sudden now silence? That concerns me, I must admit.
He did it again today. He made that statement again today about there's only one president. And,
oh, my goodness. Well, I think, you know, we better unpack, those of us who are hoping for something a little more meaningful, a little more sophisticated, a little more focused on America's interests rather than exclusively on Israel's, because that isn't going to help us a great deal, I'm afraid.
Now, it's been one-sided and in many cases neglectful. I think the Bush administration has neglected our responsibilities in that area.
No, they were doing exactly what they thought was right. Coming out, you know, very, very strongly on almost all of these issues, they really have done nothing other than have photo ops at various places around the world, because nothing was put forward, nothing has been accomplished, nothing was followed up on, clumsy sentence that. But all of these things have just slid away because in their view, they think that that's the right path for us to have followed. I happen to believe that they're wrong. But they don't speak to me, and I don't listen to them, so it works out reasonably well.
Well, I think you better go down there and knock on the door. Somebody's got to help change things a little bit. As you said, balance things. That's all we're looking for is balance.
Balance, and even more than that, it's in America's basic interests for the people in that part of the region and other parts of the region to live in something resembling at least tolerance, you know, if not loving peace. You can't ask for too much in this thing. But you're not going to get that this way. It can never be achieved in the same sense that I have railed at my government for insisting that they were going to compel the people in Iraq to be democratic. But by definition, you cannot, you know, impose democracy. An imposed democracy is a dictatorship.
Right.
You can't force people to make a free choice. I mean, that's an oxymoron. So in the Middle East, it's pretty much the same thing. If Israel, as a nation, and she faces, by the way, as you're probably as aware as I am, she faces internally the same kinds of problems that Mr. Obama faces, in the sense that a large number of highly motivated people do not want the United States to change the policy that it's been following. So he has to pay attention to that in the same way that the Israeli government has to pay attention to the desires and wants of those parts of the body politic that support what it is that's happening now.
Well,
democracy.
I hope everybody can come to an understanding that the people in Gaza, the people anywhere in this world who live in abject poverty and with oppression, are going to look to terrorism to try and help themselves some way, or they're going to turn a blind eye to terrorism, as many people have done with Hamas and Hezbollah. I don't know. I hope and pray something can be worked out in soon, because
you have to give people choices. What we are doing, what Israel is doing, what we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan is attacking the symptoms.
Yes.
Leaving the disease untouched.
Absolutely.
Things happen that cause folks to behave in this kind of barbaric fashion. And if you don't wish to look at what those things are, then you're going to be stuck with dealing with the results, which, again, are, you know, of the disease. That's what you're looking at now, is the disease of terrorism, but it doesn't grow by itself. It grows because things are going on that people do not like and cannot accept, and they're prepared to take action to try to change the situation in those circumstances. It's happened all over the world. we had a guy named George Washington who was involved in just that kind of activity not all that long ago in world terms.
That's for certain. Ambassador Peck, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always good to hear your perspective on anything. I hope we can have some good news to report about this.
Yes, sir. Wouldn't that soon. Be a blessing?
But it appears we're going to have a couple of more weeks of it. I don't know. I hope it ends before then. But thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We'll be in touch, and we appreciate so much your appearance on the Guy James Show.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Ambassador Ed Peck, gentleman wise to the ways of the Middle East and to the Gaza situation. As he mentioned, he was over there the whole month of November. I should mention to you that I did try and put forth a pretty good effort today to get a hold of the gentleman that we had on the program last week from Gaza City, Mr. Muhammad Ali, and I am unable to raise him on the phone. It seems much of the phone service in Gaza has been cut off, along with the rest of the infrastructure, the water, the sewer, the electric. And so now we have lost phone contact with a good deal of that area as well. So the news coming out of there will be sporadic. It'll be, as you well know, it'll be what the networks choose it to be. That is why you need to choose where you get your news very carefully. You need to check not only with our networks here in this country, not only with the BBC and Reuters, but check with Al Jazeera, check with the Canadian News Service, other news service, and you will end up with a balanced picture. Believe me, and I don't have to tell any of my listeners this, if you watch only the American media, and if you listen only to the Bush administration or whatever administration's in power at the time, you will not end up with an honest, balanced picture of what is going on in places like Gaza right now. You know that very well. So most of my listeners, and I hear from so many of you so often, are very astute in picking that up and knowing that you can't just tune in to your evening news, or you just can't tune in to Fox and find out the truth about what happens. If you did in this particular situation, I think one would draw the conclusion in this instance between the Israelis and the Palestinians that the Palestinians have just bombed the hell out of Israel and Israel is merely striking back. There's a lot more to it than that. And we'll discuss that some more after the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're looking forward to heading to Washington, D.C. about 12 days from right now to cover the inauguration, getting ready for that. And we're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour right now. So we hope you'll be there when we get back. We expect you to be. And we'll be back right after the news.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. It isn't all bad news in the job market if you are willing to knock on doors and meet your neighbors. The U.S. Census Bureau has begun rolling out the 2010 federal census and needs to hire hundreds of thousands of workers all across the country. The U.S. Constitution mandates that every 10 years the population of the country needs to be counted, and that means jobs. It is also a law that every person in the country needs to take part in the census. The Bureau isn't only seeking those looking for jobs. They are also looking for individuals who may have full-time jobs but could use part-time work on the side. A census worker will be expected to commit to 10 to 12 weeks and can work anywhere from 20 to 40 hours per week. The pay is $12.50 per hour with mileage compensation, although the Bureau tries to assign workers to their communities. Applicants are asked to fill out a 28-question test and will also need to submit to a background check. Information collected during the census helps determine the allocation of congressional seats, as well as monitors population trends, and helps determine how best to distribute $300 billion in federal funds. More information on becoming a census worker can be found at census.gov. 2009 is shaping up to be a big year for contract negotiations. In addition to the ongoing contract negotiations between Hollywood producers and the Screen Actors Guild, which could lead to an entertainment strike, a number of major union contracts are set to expire. The largest is between the Communication Workers of America and AT&T. The contract covers 102,000 workers. Also for negotiation will be the contract covering New York City's 78,000 teachers and faculty, represented by the American Federation of Teachers. And a concessionary contract signed by workers represented by the Machinists Union, while United Airlines was facing bankruptcy, also expires towards the end of the year. It is a safe bet that workers will be seeking justification in the sacrifices they made to help keep the airline afloat. The national unemployment rate could hit 7% when new numbers are released on Friday. November saw the largest number of job cuts in 34 years, pushing the unemployment rate to 6.7%. Filings of new jobless claims fell during the last week of December, but economists project the small bit of relief was due to seasonal hiring. Overall activity at U.S. factories dropped to the lowest rate in 28 years in December. Automakers continue to fare poorly as consumers lose confidence in making major purchases. When all is said and done for 2008, economists are projecting auto sales to be at the lowest level since 1992, and down 2.7 million sales in comparison to 2007. The last time the United States saw such a drastic year-over-year decline in auto sales was in 1974. That's when the country was in the midst of an oil crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Flight! Flight, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get caught up. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Lots of news going on right now. Say, I did want to mention, I know that we've talked at length on the program about job losses here in the country and the economy and all. And I have some good news for you. I do. I looked long and hard for this. I thought, where can some of my friends that need a job find a good job? And it so happens that I've found a place in my search where you can apply, and it's a good job, it's an interesting job, I promise. And all you need to do is go and apply, and who knows what might happen. And I say this because the FBI, the nation's premier law enforcement agency, has 3,000 job openings. That's right, you heard it here. 3,000 job openings in the FBI. Now think about this. You want a rewarding career? You want a career that makes pretty good money? interesting. You don't have to go to work and be bored every day. Join the FBI. Wow. Well, wouldn't that be great? They've got openings for 850 special agents. And now those are the ones you really want. Those are the jobs you really want, the special agent. And then they've got the orders for 2,100 professional support personnel. I don't want the support personnel job. That's a, being a desk jockey, isn't it? That's still probably a good job. The FBI's unexpectedly large number of job openings results from attrition and a wave of retirements. Wow. The FBI routinely advertises openings for individuals with critical skills in computer science and language fluency. There you go. Any of you got special language skills? But John Roche, Assistant Director of the FBI's Human Resource Division, says current needs are much more wide-ranging. We're looking for professionals in a wide variety of fields who have a deep desire to help protect our nation from terrorists, spies, and others who wish us harm. Now, man, that sounds like a good job, doesn't it? Let me see here if it lists what they pay. Doesn't have a pay scale here, but I'm sure it's fairly good. Officials note that at least a few jobs are currently available in every one of the FBI's 56 field offices across the nation. The FBI lists openings throughout the year, but seldom has anything close to the current number of available positions. Well, the present job postings expire on January 16th, but a new, possibly smaller set of openings will be posted shortly thereafter, the agency said. Well, now, there you have it. You're looking for excitement, looking for good money, looking for security, a government job, not just any old job. Go to your local FBI office today and put in your application. I'm sure most of my listeners are well qualified to be special agents or FBI support personnel. And it's got to pay decent money, I would think. It is a government job, after all. Any government job, it pays fairly well, and any government job especially has good benefits. I would go into a situation that's taking place all over Florida right now, but I don't know how many of you would be interested. There's this double-dipping thing that the legislature is allowed to happen. For example, our local superintendent of schools here locally got to retire for 1 month. You're able here in Florida now to quit your public job for 1 month, get your big fat retirement bonus money in one big fat check, and then go back to the job you retired from and collect your pension and your pay as well. They have actually, the legislature here in Florida has actually made that legal. The local property appraiser, I don't know what they call him, the treasurer for the county, he just did that. And I could be a little off of my numbers, but if memory serves me correct, he got around $480,000-some. He makes, I don't know, 150 G's a year right now. So he quits for a month, just takes a month vacation, gets the big bonus check, and then goes back to work at his full salary, and then gets his full pension. How does that sound to you? It's, believe me when I tell you, I have probably candy-coated it here from lack of knowledge, but it is one of the most outrageous things I've ever heard in government in this country. And so that's why I particularly sometimes pick on some government jobs. Hey, I'm not picking on all of you. You guys out there delivering the mail, some of you guys got government jobs that just suck and work hard, actually. But, man, if you're at the top of the food chain, which some of these people around here are. And then there's a little issue of them building the Boston Red Sox. Here we are in a horrible economy here locally. I'm talking bad news. And they're building a new stadium for the Boston Red Sox out of public funds. You look at some of these things and you go, what, are you crazy? Are you crazy? But it goes on anyway, and you know all the noise being made over this double dipping and everything, it'll all die down. The legislators know it will. They say it's so that they can keep good people on the job. Can't you keep good people on the job just by giving them job security and paying them a good wage and a good retirement? Do you have to? Don't get me started. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Leon Panetta. There's a guy I admire tremendously. Here's a guy that's been very bipartisan about a lot of things. And he gets appointed to be a head of the CIA. It's not been formally announced yet actually, he wanted the commerce job, I'm hearing. And then we had this debacle with Bill Richardson, and Leon Panetta wanted that job in the first place. Isn't that odd how that turned out? But President-elect Obama, it gets out that Panetta is going to be his designated leader of the CIA. It'll go before the Center for Confirmation. And Dianne Feinstein and Jay Rockefeller, Democrats, squealing like stuck pigs. Why, we weren't informed. We weren't informed. Last time I checked, that was President-elect Obama's choice. And he didn't have to check with you, Dianne Feinstein. He didn't have to check with you, Jay Rockefeller. Did you get your widow feelings hurt? That Obama didn't come crawling to you and say, oh, gee, I need your wise and sage advice on this. Is that what it is? Of course that's what it is. I don't care what Dianne Feinstein has to say about it. I don't care what Jay Rockefeller has to say about it. They recommended that a career CIA officer has to come in and run the agency. Well, I would submit to you that maybe that's part of the problem we've had all along. Maybe we have to bring somebody in from outside the agency to be able to see past the problems. Sometimes you're in an organization and you become what I call store blind. You're in a retail store, you're the manager, and you get in there so often you don't see the problems anymore. And that's what I mean by store blind. And that's why I think it's a good idea to bring in fresh blood from the outside. So, Dianne Feinstein and Jay Rockefeller, they're not happy. Isn't it just like the Democrats? Isn't it just like them? I hope I see either one of them the day after the inauguration. I hope I do. Believe me when I tell you I would bring this up and give my feelings on the issue. Well, you know, Leon Panetta might not have been working on intelligent case reports, but he said, and let me tell you how he feels. Let me tell you something he wrote about the situation. Panetta wrote this. More recently, President Bush vetoed a law that would require the CIA and all the intelligence services to abide by the same rules on torture as contained in the U.S. Army Field Manual. The president says the rules are too restrictive, implying that the use of some forms of torture just could help avoid another September 11th. But, as Panetta says, all forms of torture have long been prohibited by American law and international treaties respected by Republican and Democrat presidents alike. Panetta goes on to say in an article he wrote some time ago, our forefathers prohibited cruel and unusual punishment because that was how tyrants and despots ruled in the 1700s. They wanted an America that was better than that. Torture is illegal, immoral, dangerous, and counterproductive, and yet the president is using fear to trump the law. And as he wrote, We have preached these values in the world. We have made clear that there are certain lines Americans will not cross because we respect the dignity of every human being. That pledge was written into the oath of office given to every president to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. It's what is supposed to make our leaders different from every tyrant, dictator, or despot. We are sworn to government by the rule of law, not by brute force. And Panetta went on to say in the article, we cannot simply suspend these beliefs in the name of national security. Those who support torture may believe that we can abuse captives in certain select circumstances and still be true to our values, but that is a false compromise. We either believe in the dignity of the individual, the rule of law, and the prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment, or we don't. There's no middle ground. We cannot and we must not use torture under any circumstances. We are better than that, end quote, Leon Panetta. We don't have to have somebody within the ranks of the CIA to run the CIA. We need to have a man with the attitude to write something like I just quoted to you. We need to have a man with those ethics and those morals and that understanding of what is right and what is wrong for America. Put a man in there who will not cross the line in the sand. Now we have this squealing coming from Dianne Feinstein, who had no problem voting for pro-torture Attorney General Michael Mukasey, who refuses to say that torture is wrong, and pro-torture CIA head Porter Goss. And Feinstein and Rockefeller have pretty much put up with the BS from the Bush administration. They haven't said a whole lot over the last 8 years. One thing we all need to remember, and I want to give Barack Obama the benefit of the doubt on all of his appointments and all of his actions until he proves otherwise that we can't trust him. But for now, I trust him explicitly on these things. And the one thing that you need to remember about Leon Panetta, over and above everything else, is if he is confirmed as CIA director, is that he's going to bring something new and really interesting and really valuable to the intel community. You see, having been there for a long time, he knows how things work inside the West Wing because he was there as the White House Chief of Staff. And because of that, he will know how to provide information that gets the right attention in the right way. He will know how to present information to the President of the United States. And I think the intelligence community is going to have a big advantage in terms of getting their point of view across in the Oval Office if it's presented by one Leon Panetta, because he's a bridge between the two, if he gets confirmed, knowing the workings of the White House the way he does, and being the representative, the head of the CIA. I think he knows how to be subtle, and I think he will know how to avoid what happened on 9/11. Instead of sending an emissary from the CIA to go see George Bush at his ranch, and George Bush blows him off and said, well, you've done your job, get on out. I think Leon Panetta would have been there in the president's ear saying, hey, look, this is serious. We've got to do something. So that's what kind of a man Leon Panetta is. You know, I feel kind of instinctively suspicious of this Feinstein and Rockefeller reaction to this appointment. Rockefeller saying that he's not happy. Well, he was a poor ranking member and then chairman of the Senate committee. I don't think that means a whole lot. And so, maybe the Obama team should have made a courtesy call to Feinstein. She's going to oversee that committee from now on. Maybe they blew it there. But I like this appointment. And I think the demilitarizing of our security agencies is a good idea. I think it's a very good idea. I think it'll prove to be a good thing. I like Leon Panetta, in other words. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Preston in Denver.
Hi, Preston. Good to have you with us this afternoon.
Thank you. I called in sick today. Have a little bit of a cold, so I'm glad I had the chance to tune into your program. And thanks so much for making an effort to speak with a person in Gaza. I didn't catch it, but I guess last week you did get to speak with that person, and I heard from other people that it was a powerful dialogue.
It was, and I am terribly concerned that we can't get a hold of him again. I just hope everything's okay. Yes, it was a riveting conversation. It was.
Great. I've actually been connecting with some people in Palestine over Facebook. I resolved this New Year's to better use that social networking device, and I've gotten a lot out of it, for sure. And I noticed Bob Kincaid has a page in the Head On Radio Network, and I know you have plenty of projects to do, but if you get a chance, you might want to check it out and create your own page.
All right, being the curmudgeon that I am here, and I want to apologize to many listeners. Boy, you've really put it to me here now. I have many listeners who I get emails from, who however that works on the Facebook or what Facebook thing, inviting you to be on it or whatever, however it is they do that.
Uh-huh.
And I am busy, and I haven't responded to any of it because, first of all, I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me, what do I do when I get one of these things?
Good questions, and I'm not good at this stuff either. But essentially, there are a couple, the two major forums. One's MySpace. The other one is called Facebook. In both... You know, I don't know a lot of computer stuff, but last year, about a year ago, both of them, you go to it, you register, and then you have your own page, and you can kind of, you know, say something about yourself, what your projects and passions and interests are. And, you know, on MySpace, it seemed a little bit more complicated because people were able to, like, you know, I haven't even gotten to the point where I can upload a photo of myself or just a artwork or whatever. But on MySpace, people have their music playing, and people can kind of, it serves as kind of a personal message board in a way, and you can kind of link to other people's boards and then link to other people's media or their organization or whatever, join little fan clubs of favorite authors. And I haven't gone back so much to MySpace, but I did go back to Facebook. And like I said, I just registered there. It was really simple. And then I forgot about it, but I really applied myself to it. And it's simple. It's just a matter of, you know, dropping little messages to someone or some group that you share, you know, interests with.
So it's just kind of a cyber social gathering to get together and exchange ideas and like you would all getting together at a coffee house, only you're doing it from the confines of your home.
That's right. And certainly in some cases it leads to, you know, face-to-face meetings. You know, like right now I've been putting up a link to something called greenfestivals.org. And I'm trying to alert people in Denver and the surrounding area of it because they're going to have a big Green Festival here in Denver in May. And here on this Facebook, I found environmental groups here in Denver. I've written a note to a community radio station. I just wrote a note to a community access TV project and asked if maybe they'd want to record this event. And they got right back to me. And, you know, sometimes people don't use it so much and they won't return your comments, but oftentimes they do. I've connected with, you know, several of the commercial radio station talk show hosts that I speak with here in Denver and have said hello. So it does build community. And you get to know a person, I think, a little bit better in a way. I know it's not face-to-face, but I think there's a real usefulness to it. Head on Radio Network, I'm looking at their page right now. It's something I just found today. And I noticed that there are like 30 fans of the Head On Radio Network who have, you know, just put their link here on the page. And I've actually heard from a couple of listeners of Bob's show. They've added me as a Facebook friend, Cassie Freckles and Faith. Faith in, I forget her last name, but she's in Michigan. And, you know, I find out about the interesting work that they're doing. Like, Faith is part of this conference of radical scholars who are going to be talking about social change and how it comes about and, you know, education for a progressive society. So I'm just learning so much.
Well, good. I promise to do better. I'll try and check it out and get on and see what's happening. I need to.
I think you'll enjoy it. Also, I heard you speaking about government jobs. I have a government job, actually, with the state of Colorado, and I'm just part of the process that takes care of tax forms, people's, you know, returns and corporate returns and stuff like that.
You have a state, you have a state income tax in Colorado?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And you know, mostly it's people, you know, applying to get their refund back. You know, sometimes they owe, you know, and it's businesses putting in their, you know, what they owe and so forth. Very monotonous job. I can actually listen to my headphones while I work. Most everybody does there.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't do like auditing or something like that, complicated stuff at all. I'm not part of that. But I can be a big critic of government, certainly at times, but generally speaking, I feel decent about this job because it's, you know, getting revenues to my community so that they can build schools and keep the water clean and stuff like that. Okay. And but there are those other sorts of government jobs, like you mentioned, and they seem to be the sectors that are really hiring, like the FBI and the CIA, which I've been hearing advertising on a lot of talk radio shows. Especially the shows like Sean Hannity, they'll have these advertisements about, are you a patriotic American? Come join America's clandestine organization, the CIA, and serve your country. And the thought of some sanitized moron joining a position like that, you know, getting paid big money to surveil people and to, you know,
now
be part
that
of like these,
scares me.
Right, exactly.
That is scary. A hanitized moron. You got it right there. That's mm-hmm. a good way to put it. Being an FBI field agent or in a mm-hmm. CIA. Oh no, no,
yeah.
no.
Yep. Yeah. So really, that's disturbing. And I really think we need to be advertising, you know, jobs for more park rangers and librarians and healthcare workers and so forth. And it's so ironic too, all these right wing shows, how the hosts go on and on and on and on and on and about how bad government is and government socialism. And I'd say probably 3/4 of them have jobs in the military, are in our FBI or whatever. So they sit there and condemn it and yeah. they're totally a part of it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's only bad, it's only, you know, it's bad if it's somebody else. It's not bad if it's you. I mean,
yeah.
you know how that
goes. It's bad if it's like social services. If it's part of a nanny state, they hate it. I like my Nan. You know, she was a caretaker. What they prefer is like this drunken, angry father state.
Yeah.
An abuser
right,
state.
Exactly.
Authoritarian type. But even though in the CIA, it's not monolithic. There are decent people in that organization. Sometimes they do very important work. And James Woolsey, I've heard him interviewed a couple of times regarding this Panetta appointment. And he's an interesting guy himself. He's a mix, but I saw him on a documentary called A Crude Awakening. And it's about peak oil issues.
Where he was driving the, he's got a white Prius car he was driving and all during
his
I saw that, yeah.
That's right. He's done other things like put solar panels on his house. Just what he's saying, some of his public statements have been very, I'm sure, annoying to the fossil fuel industry that wants to keep us not unconcerned about these potential catastrophes. And there's people like Woolsey saying this could be, you know, peak oil, climate change, these are national, international security issues, and we need to start this transition. And, you know, these so-called, you know, Hannity's always saying he's so concerned about security this, security that, we're going to protect you. And he is actively denying the warnings of people like James Woolsey, who know a hell of a lot more about the issues than Sean does. Again, Sean is just a vehicle for corporate public relations from, you know, the oil industry and others who want to keep us in denial.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Hey, thanks so much for your call. Good to hear from you. Next time you're off, give me a call.
I'll do that.
Always
sure.
Good to hear from you. I have fond memories of this past summer of being in Denver, your beautiful city and state, for the convention. I was there, and I enjoyed it so much.
Good.
I had a wonderful time and was treated so well. God, it was great.
Wonderful. Good catching up with you, guy.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
See, we have government employees list, but not while they're at work. See, he was not at work today. Let's go ahead and do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. We have one of our listeners complaining that he never gets to hear the music he wants to hear. So I thought, I see that he's here today. He's on the board today, so this is for him. He knows who he is. I guess we all know who we are, right? Most of us, anyway.
Forgive sounds good. Forgive, I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I paid a price. And I'll keep paying.
I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting.
Oh, yeah, the chicks. The this chicks. Is. We're not ready to make nice. Well, the shame of it is we just can't afford to be ready to make nice. We cannot. One would think that after a whole couple of years of electioneering and this process that we've just been through that came to culmination in November, early November, when we elected Barack Obama to the presidency of the United States, that we'll have a new, fresh administration in Washington, D.C. We have a lot of new Democratic senators, a lot of new Democratic congressional members, House members. And those of us that pushed for that, you want to feel like maybe you could sit back and relax and say, okay, we've elected the people that we wanted to go in there and express our wishes and our ideals. And what we think is the right way to run this country and what policies we think are wrong. And so we've got our people in there, and let's take a breather. Let's relax. Let's sit down and let them do it. Sorry. Sorry. We can't be ready to make nice. We can't be ready to make nice with the Republicans because obviously... they're not ready to make nice, even though they're in the minority, and I'm not so sure right now that being in the minority is a bad thing. Maybe being in the minorities, maybe that's a ploy on the part of the Republicans, because doesn't it seem to you like they've gotten everything they want in Congress lately? Doesn't it seem that ever since Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi have been in leadership positions that they've given in to the Republicans on almost every issue? So maybe it's not so bad to be in that minority. Maybe not. And so we can't be ready to make nice. We can't just sit back and relax. We can't just sit back and say, okay, it's in your hands now, guys, take it and run with it, because we know, as in this Gaza issue right now, that we're going to have to speak up and say something. And maybe you and I don't all agree on this situation, but I tell you, I think this our guest, Ambassador Peck, brought up the notion that we need to achieve balance on that issue. Well, I would submit to you that the United States government, all of my lifetime, has not pursued balance in that relationship between Israel and their neighbors. They haven't pursued balance at all. So it is up to us, I guess, to have to call and scream and holler and email and mail and do everything we can to tell this administration we'd like to see some balance. When Israel's wrong, we'd like you to tell them they're wrong and not back them on everything they do automatically. It does hurt the United States of America when that situation isn't balanced. I can't see a change coming in that area of the world. Can't see it at all. You know it won't change unless we speak up and demand it. You know, this ceasefire that they had in Gaza, it didn't collapse because there was no real ceasefire to start with. Any meaningful ceasefire in the Gaza Strip has got to start with the opening of the borders. There can't be a decent life in Gaza unless they have access to a steady flow of supplies of food and things need to live life with dignity. I mean, this blockade has been going on for a long time, on the land, on the sea, in the air. 1.5 million people. It's an act of war, a blockade like that. The Israelis admitted as such, like the ambassador said back in 1967. said that the Egyptians closing off the port was an act of war. And they went and did something about it. Quite a lot, I might add. What's the difference between what the Egyptians did to them and what they're doing to the people in Gaza right now, these blockades? They've got them completely blockaded on land, on sea, and in the air. The people in Gaza are powerless to do anything about it. It's, 85% unemployment? Hundreds of thousands of them on the brink of starvation. We've heard from medical people. We've seen them on the news lately talking about how the hospitals are barely functioning because they don't have a decent supply of electricity and water. And have the Israelis considered the fact that they are not going to destroy Hamas in this fashion? They are only going to create many more members of Hamas. It's crazy. Charles Krauthammer, a guy I just absolutely detest on Fox News, said some geopolitical conflicts are morally complicated. The Israeli-Gaza war is not. It possesses a moral clarity not only rare but excruciating. That's the attitude of many Americans. Moral clarity. If you can look at the photos of the dead kids held in the arms of their parents and laying on the gurneys in the hospitals and the morgues, if you can look at dead kids and say that that preserves moral clarity, you're in a nutcase. Moral clarity. You know, it's against UN, it's against the law, international law, to use phosphorus shells. You're only allowed to use them as a smoke screen. And I don't know if you're familiar with phosphorus shells, what they do, but these phosphorus shells explode, and these burning blobs of phosphorus that get on you and will burn right through you. Burn right through you. You can forget a fire extinguisher. If you get a glob of that burning phosphorus on you, it'll burn right through you. And here the Israelis are using phosphorus weapons in the Gaza Strip, is one of the world's most densely populated areas. The Geneva Treaty of 1980 stipulates that white phosphorus should not be used as a weapon of war in civilian areas. Those purposely using phosphorus weapons in an area like that should end up at The Hague. I don't care whether they're from Israel, from the United Kingdom, the United States, no matter where they're from, anybody using white phosphorus shells on a civilian population should end up at The Hague. Moral clarity indeed, Mr. Krauthammer. Moral clarity indeed. I know that people suffer, and every time there's military happenings like this take place around the world, but I thought we were getting a little more civilized. I thought as time went on, as civilization went on, That makes it even all the more wrong. Because we supposedly have advanced as a society. We've supposedly come a long way since the days of the barbarians. The horrible atrocities that took place during wars and in times past. Back in the days when conquering armies conquered another army and put the other army all to death and sold their women into slavery and their children into prostitution and everything they could like that. I thought we had progressed. But in some ways we have not. Because this is inhumane. And the world sees that it is inhumane. And yet they have the backing of our government. It's wrong. Absolutely wrong. 866-546-5254. I see our... I was going to call him our crazy friend. He's not a friend. He is crazy, however. How many of you know who Bill Cunningham is in Cincinnati? WLW in Cincinnati, big old 50,000 watter there. Bill Cunningham has been around for a long, long time in Cincinnati. He's been on the radio for a long, long time. He's as screwed up and insane as anybody that you've ever heard on the radio, even more than Mark Levin, even more than Michael Reagan or Mike Gallagher or Glenn Beck or Hannity, even more so. The guy's certifiable. Bill Cunningham said, and let me quote him, and they've got him on here locally on the weekend, of course. If you're a flaming freaking right-wing nutcase, you can get a show on the radio here locally. Cunningham said, and I quote, "I cannot say it too often or too many times. Nothing FDR did in the 1930s stopped or alleviated the Great Depression. Almost everything FDR did in the 1930s exacerbated the Great Depression. There's nothing LBJ did in 64, 65, and 66 that helped the plight of the African Americans. In fact, it hurt them. Almost all their actions brought about the law of unintended consequences. The goal of modern cities, the model cities, Section 8 housing and food stamps, was to give the poor people money, not understanding that the poor people were not and are not poor." This is the good part about this. "Were not and are not poor because they lack money." Remember, this is right-wing extremist radio hack Bill Cunningham saying this. This is the part of this quote that is so vile, so extreme, so out of the mainstream. It's in the right-wing mainstream. But he said they're poor, and let me quote him. "They're not poor because they lack money. They're poor because they lack values, ethics, and morals." He goes on to say that all the mid-60s and 70s did to the black community was to pay black fathers money on condition that they not be involved in the lives of their children, and that black mothers were told that if you're married, it would have painful consequence. If, on the other hand, you acted irresponsibly by producing children out of wedlock, you would have a positive consequence because government would fund bad behavior. So LBJ and the Democrats and Republicans had the best intentions to solve poverty by giving poor people money, acting as if it was the resolution of their problem, when just the opposite occurred. By giving poor people money by acting irresponsibly, they incentivized more irresponsible behavior. They're poor because they lack values, ethics, and morals. So saith Bill Cunningham, Cincinnati radio talk show host, and on the weekend here in the Fort Myers Naples area. Wouldn't you be ashamed if you owned a radio station? If you had any decency about you? Would you not be ashamed and would you not feel compelled to go to this man and say, hey, you've got a job and you're speaking on my airtime. I am personally offended by what you have to say. But no, that's not the case at all. Because statements like that bring ratings. And ratings, of course, bring money in the radio business. And that's what it's about, after all. Sickening. We'll be back.
Inside these empty walls.
Jackson Browne. Birds of St. Mark. Love Jackson Browne. Makes beautiful music. Thank you for being with us today here on the Guy James Show. Always a pleasure to serve you. That's what we do on this program. Speaking of being served, the Interior Secretary, Dirk Kempthorne, that's the current one, spent $235,000 of taxpayer money on renovations to his office bathroom. Now, picture, if you will, a $235,000 bathroom in a public building. The General Services Administration approved the project because the office is in a government building and renovation to aging plumbing would have to have been made eventually. Additions included a shower, a refrigerator, a freezer, and, of course, the obligatory monogrammed towels. Now, my question is, since the government paid for these monogrammed towels, and Interior Secretary Dirk Kempthorne's bathroom, where I understand there's walnut paneling, and since the new Interior Secretary's initials will not be DK, does he get to take the towels with him? One wonders such things. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Hey, thanks for joining us here today on the Guy James Show and Head On Radio Network. Always a pleasure to have you along with us. We'll be back tomorrow with more educational and interesting conversation, and of course, your comments as well. Thanks for listening to the Guy James Show. I hope you'll head on over to the GuyJamesShow.com/blog and see our latest comment up there. I want you all to see that. Hey, thanks for being with us. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you heard from the Radical Right.